Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Christensen. Thanks so much for listening and making this podcast popular and sharing it with your friends. I'm greatly overwhelmed by the number of people that care about pharmacology and really want to learn and try to pick up some clinical pearls. So you can reach out to me, reallifepharmacology.com. And with that, let's get into the drug we're going to talk about today, which is Zolpidem. So the brand name for Zolpidem is Ambien, and this is a drug that I see on a somewhat regular basis. I think it's less nowadays because of some of the risks associated with the drug than it was, you know, maybe 5, 10 plus years ago there. So very, very important to understand some things about this medication. First, let's talk about the mechanism of action, because I think that's important. One of the drugs or the class of drugs that I associate Zolpidem with is the benzodiazepines, okay? So there's definitely a significant amount of overlap between Zolpidem and benzodiazepines. The difference, the primary difference, so both drugs class versus Zolpidem, class of benzodiazepines versus Zolpidem, they enhance the effects of GABA. And GABA is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. Now, there's a couple of different sites, receptor sites, that I need to cover here. So there's the benzodiazepine 1 receptor site and benzodiazepine 2 receptor site. And the primary difference between Zolpidem and the benzodiazepines is the activity on those sites. So agonist activity on benzodiazepine site 1 will ultimately lead to the sedative, sleeping, hypnotic type adverse effects, which benzodiazepines and Zolpidem carry. Now, Zolpidem's a little bit more selective for that site. Benzodiazepine 2 site, that's more of associated with anxiety as well as anti-seizure type activity. So that's why you don't see Zolpidem used in the management treatment of anxiety or in the management of seizures compared to benzodiazepines. So very, very important, I think, to note that difference and, you know, why you wouldn't see Zolpidem used in an acute seizure situation. Well, there's not IV formulation, and I mean, there's other reasons for that, but that's an important distinction between these drugs. However, because they're both active at the benzodiazepine site 1, they have agonist activity there, they definitely are going to have similar overlapping side effect profiles. And often with many drugs, the higher you increase that dose, we sometimes lose that selectivity as well. So you could have, obviously, a blend and blur of some of the adverse effects that are associated with both Zolpidem and Z-drugs compared to the benzodiazepines like lorazepam and diazepam, for example. So that's a little bit of a deeper dive into the mechanism of action there. It's important to remember with these drugs, there is risk for addiction, dependence, they're a controlled substance. So I think that's very important to remember. And these drugs really were studied, and the best evidence has been shown to be the short-term relief of insomnia. Okay, these drugs aren't typically meant to be used long-term. However, I have definitely seen patients that are on these medications on a more long-term basis. So, but we really want to try to have an exit strategy or have a limitation or an expectation with that patient, because we really don't want patients to be on these long-term if they don't have to be. So very important to think about that if you're starting or initiating these drugs, that we don't want this to be an ongoing thing forever if we can at all help that. Dosing, so immediate release 5 milligrams, immediate release 10 milligrams, those are the two most common dosage forms you're going to see in clinical practice. There is an extended release version, 6.25 and 12.5 milligrams. Keep in mind, dose-dependent adverse effects are concerning with these drugs. So as you get to, you know, the 10 milligram dose for immediate release and the 12.5 milligram dose for extended release, you're more and more likely to run into excessive sedation, confusion, maybe increased risk for falls, things of that nature as we increase that dose. So those are really the primary adverse effects. These drugs are going to be sedating, so obviously that's going to help manage insomnia. However, with that, we can certainly go over the line, so to speak, and cause too much sedation. In addition, confusion, you know, loss of mental clarity, fall risk, especially in our elderly geriatric patients. That's something I encounter, of course. Those are issues as well. And we need to really weigh that carefully with the potential benefit we're going to get from the medication. There is a warning with these drugs as well, like Zolpidem. So unusual sleep behaviors have been reported. Sleepwalking, sleep eating, even situations, cases of sleep driving have been reported. Now, obviously, that's a huge risk to our patient and potentially others as well. So if patients are encountering those issues, the drug just has to be stopped. That's the recommendation there. So definitely inquire about that. Inquire family members, spouses. If you notice things that are unusual with this medication, definitely got to address that and likely stop the medication there. Another important education point is recognizing that those adverse effects like confusion and sedation, loss of mental clarity, those can linger into the next day. So if you do book work from home or something like that, that's probably not quite as concerning. However, if you've got a very serious job where people's lives are on the line, maybe you run machinery, maybe you're driving to work the next day, you've got to recognize that that drug could have some lingering effects. And this is actually more predominant in females based upon the pharmacokinetics. Given a similar dose, we've actually seen in studies that females will actually have a higher concentration of the drug given a similar dose compared to males. So very, very important to remember that. Females, we maybe want to be a little extra cautious. Obviously, another patient population is the geriatric patient population. They may not metabolize the drug as quickly, probably more likely to be on other sedating agents, which I'll cover drug interactions there as well. But very, very important to consider that. Withdrawal symptoms, things like increased anxiety, things like that, can result as on account of stopping that drug abruptly. And obviously, this is going to be in most situations where that patient's been on that drug for, you know, weeks, months, years even. Those withdrawal symptoms are going to be more and more likely. So as a geriatric pharmacist, that's really my specialty, the area I work in the most, you've got to recognize that we're likely going to have to taper off this medication if a patient's on, you know, moderate to high doses and they've been on it for quite a while. So some things that I think about with the taper, how long have they been on it? What dose are they starting at? And also, have they tried to come off that medication in the past? I see this oftentimes with clinicians that I've worked with where they say, hey, you know, we've tried off this in the past. They're going to need it forever. Well, how was that taper done? Did you try to go from, you know, 10 milligrams to nothing in 2 days and that's what you did? Or, you know, did you go, you know, try to reduce to maybe 7.5 milligrams? You know, then maybe 5 milligrams. Did you try to do it over a couple of months? Because oftentimes I've seen clinicians get into this situation where we've tried to taper the drug too aggressively. And then what happens? Well, the patient fails the taper and we never try again and they're stuck on that medication forever. So very important to look at that, try to get context of that. And as long as the patient's not experiencing overt adverse effects, definitely I would encourage a slow taper to try to prevent, eliminate, minimize some of those withdrawal symptoms that could potentially happen with the drug. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor, MedEd101.com. If you're in the market for board certification study material like NAPLEX, pharmacotherapy, board certified geriatric pharmacist, ambulatory care, MTM, definitely go check out MedEd101.com/store. We've got a growing list of resources, packages with over 1,000 question banks, in some cases hours and hours of lectures with different disease states. So lots of good information there to help you pass your specific exam. So go check that out. If you're a healthcare professional, nurse practitioner, PA, we've got lots of clinical resources, books on Amazon. Go check out those resources. Really good information for anybody that manages drug therapy, works with drug therapy, can really help you decipher, you know, what's clinically important and what's not clinically important. My latest book that I've recently created was a book on drug interactions. So you'll definitely find that on MedEd101.com/store under the list of Amazon books. So with that, let's get into drug interactions and specifically talking about zolpidem. So the first one I think of is medications that are going to cause or exacerbate sedation. Okay, so this is really an additive effect type situation. And you've got to remember that there are some over-the-counters that can do this. So I think of anticholinergics, like diphenhydramine, for example. I think of over-the-counter sleep medications like melatonin. Patients often try these medications before they even come into a clinic, come into a pharmacy, and ask about insomnia because they want to do it on their own. It's simple, it's easy, it's cheap to buy a sleep aid over the counter. And they may not recognize that, hey, you know, this, you know, now I've got this prescription for zolpidem. This sedative effect can really add on top of what this other medication, over-the-counter medication that I'm currently taking. So really inquiring with patients about, okay, you know, you're coming in, you're insomnia, I know you've tried something, what have you tried over-the-counter? So getting to the bottom of that's really, really important so we don't end up with this drug interaction, this over-sedation, maybe increased risk of confusion and falls. That can really add up. So think about some of those over-the-counters. Obviously, prescription drugs, opioids, gabapentinoids like gabapentin, trazodone, all sorts of drugs can be sedating. So very, very important to recognize those additive effects. And if you feel like you need to start zolpidem still, definitely go slow in patients who are taking some of these other agents that could have additive effects. CYP3A4 inhibitors can potentially alter concentrations of zolpidem, so they would raise concentrations of zolpidem. So classically, your strongest inhibitors of CYP3A4, some of your azole antifungals, clarithromycin, some of your HIV medications like lopinavir, ritonavir, those are all drugs that can inhibit CYP3A4 and ultimately reduce the breakdown of zolpidem and ultimately increase concentrations. Other medications that may play a role, CYP1A2 inhibitors, so ciprofloxacin's got some CYP1A2 activity there that could potentially have some minor alterations in concentrations. Fluvoxamine and SSRI that isn't used terribly often, numerous drug interactions with that one that could also raise concentrations there. So I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. As always, with drug interactions, I highlight some important ones or things that I've seen in clinical practice. There is a whole laundry list if you go look these up online. So just wanted to highlight a few important ones there. Go sign up, subscribe, reallifepharmacology.com. That'll get you emails to when a new podcast is available. And also, we'll get you a free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little resource for studying pharmacology, studying for board exams. Definitely go check that out. Absolutely get it for free, simply for following the blog there. MedEd101.com, I blog there twice a week. So if you want to go follow over there, you can do that as well. Definitely go check that out. I'm going to have an interesting case on Risperdal and Cymbalta drug interaction coming up over the next few weeks. So by subscribing over there, you can stay tuned to that, catch some of those stories and case studies. Also support our sponsor, MedEd101.com/store. Leave us a rating review on iTunes, and I'm going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.